नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So, that is requested by Pangajangri Prabhu to say something on the Bhagavad Gita, especially the overview. So unfortunately, we are not overly qualified in such a discussion. So taking great help from Purijan Prabhu and his book, Surrender Unto Me, an overview of Bhagavad Gita, then we will try to do something. So I think to actually get an overview, we will start with the various overviews, short ones, that are in the appendices that Purijan Prabhu gives. And then from there, then we can move to the actual chapters. So in Appendix 1 is Srila Prabhupada comments on the Bhagavad Gita chapters. So this is the different chapters, what he has to say about the chapters. Chapter 1. In the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter is more or less an introduction to the rest of the work. That's in 9.1. Chapter 2. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results, and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Then, quote B, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has summarized the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as being the contents for the whole text. In the Bhagavad Gita, the subject matters are Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. In the second chapter, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been clearly discussed, and a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga has also been given as the contents for the complete text. That's from 272. And the third one. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, has very elaborately described the constitution of the soul in the second chapter, with a view to delivering his intimate friend Arjuna from the ocean of material grief, and the path of realization has been recommended. Buddhi Yoga. 3.1. Then from 3.2. In the second chapter, as a prelude to the Bhagavad Gita, many different paths were explained, such as Shankya Yoga, Buddhi Yoga, control of the senses by intelligence, work without fruit of desire, and the position of the neophyte. This was all presented unsystematically. A more organized outline of the path would be necessary for action and understanding. Next, from 5.1. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. How to get out of this material entanglement by Bhuti Yoga, or devotional service, was also explained therein, from 12.1. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord explained that a living entity is not the material body. He is a spiritual spark, and the absolute truth is the spiritual whole. So, in here it will be important to understand the position of these different aspects of the yoga system, or the yoga ladder, as Purijan calls it many times. That we are basically discussing bhakti yoga, devotional service. But now we have two aspects, or actually three aspects of bhakti yoga. One is that of prema bhakti, or actually situated in pure devotion. The second, lower than that, is the position of bhava bhakti, where it's like the budding stage of actual devotion is coming. You know, the real love for Krishna. And this starts the actual devotional process, the real essence of devotional service. And the third being sadhana bhakti. Now Baladev Vidyabhushan points out that this sadhana bhakti, or following the rules and regulations according to our intelligence, we see Prabhupada many times uses buddhi yoga. That means that one is engaging one's activities, the mind and intelligence, in the Lord's service. And this engagement, then Baladev says, because it leads to devotional service, means to pure devotional service, it is devotional service. Right? Just like many times we give the example that the process of preparing for cooking leads to cooking. And when you say you have to go to the kitchen to cook, you don't mean you're just going to walk in and magically everything's going to be in the pot with the fire on and the spoon is there and you just stir it around. No, you go into the kitchen, select what things you want to prepare, you wash them, you clean counters, clean pots, you cut them, and when everything's ready, you start to cook. Right? So this actual cooking is when we get to bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. But before that, all that is considered cooking. Everyone will say it's cooking. Anyone who knows cooking will say it's cooking. Right? Now, so this is the essential element, the essence of it, is that it's the same. So in this way we can see that the chapter has been, second chapter explains the whole Gita, because the process of how to engage the senses in the Lord's service, or karma yoga, you know, the senses in the mind, then jnana yoga, how to engage the intelligence in the Lord's service, and then bhakti yoga, how to engage pure spiritual emotions in Krishna's service, has been described. So it is, therefore, it is called the summary of the whole Gita, because this is what will be done, be given. The Prabhupada points out it's not so systematically given. It's a conversation. Generally in conversations, things aren't so systematic. You're making a point, then you get into a tangent, you get into the details of that tangent, after time you come back to the point. So many times it goes here and there, according to the audience. The speaker responds to the audience, and in this way, and the audience responds to the speaker, in this way it goes in various ways. So he's saying later then Krishna will get into very systematically presenting this in the second chapter. Another point comes is that the overall understanding that Buddhi Yoga is bhakti is very important, because this is what Prabhupada gives as his conclusions. And that, yes. When we speak of yoga, this is from Bhagavad Gita 6:46 purport. When we speak of yoga, we refer to linking our consciousness with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such a process is named differently by various practitioners in terms of the particular method adopted. When the linking process is predominantly in fruitive activities, it is called karma yoga. When it is predominantly empirical, it is called jnana yoga. And when it is predominantly in a devotional relationship with the Lord, Supreme Lord, is called Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga, or Krishna consciousness, is the ultimate perfection of all yogas. So depending upon what it is that we are engaging, that becomes what is prominent. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he many times will make a distinction between these different platforms. But that's specifically for the serious practitioner who wants to understand how to purify the different elements that you're dealing with. So you know how to purify the senses, the mind, the intelligence specifically, and to watch out for the pitfalls that are there. Like in the beginning, you just teach cooking, you teach all the different aspects and this and that. So in the beginning you have to teach the different things. You have to predominantly show them how to make the kitchen clean, how to, you know, choose the right pots for the particular preparation, how to prepare the various items that are necessary, ingredients necessary for the preparation, and then finally how to, the techniques of cooking. Now in this, when you have to get into these details, then you have to say, okay, this is cleaning the kitchen. You know, this is the cutting all the vegetables, the preparation, collecting your spices and all that. This is the actual cooking, you know, like this. In this way, then you have to make the distinction when somebody's a very serious student. But it's still considered the whole thing. So this distinction that you'll find sometimes between the acharyas, that they'll call karma yoga as bhakti, and sometimes not. It depends upon the situation that they're explaining, depending upon who they're speaking to. Prabhupada also comments on this point. Devotee, in one of your Bhagavad Gita purports, you say a sannyasi should never discourage a young man from getting married. But we have understood that a sannyasi should encourage young men to remain brahmacharis. So it seems like some kind of contradiction, Prabhupada. Just like Krishna says, niyatam kuru karma tvam, always be engaged in your prescribed work. And at last he says, sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. Now we have to adjust. That is not contradiction. That is suitable to the time and circumstance. So depending upon one's position, then these different platforms will be taken. So this is important to understand, because the Gita, depending upon whether it's giving a specific detail in an area, or whether it's giving a general look on something, or is for the time, place, and circumstance, it will give different aspects like that. So we'll see. So we have to be able to, the idea is this study, we should get a common thread just there. Chapter 3. Then from 3.1. Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. Then from 3.43. This third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directed to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind, by steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. This is the sum total of this chapter. Then from 5.1. In the third chapter is explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. So this point here of the desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. That it is. So it says, is the greatest enemy. It's two aspects of the same point. You have the desire to control, the desire to enjoy, or the envy and attachment. So what has happened is because of our envy for Krishna, we have lost our attachment to Krishna. Because we want to be the enjoyer instead of Krishna the enjoyer, we have changed or shifted our attachment from Krishna to this material nature. So if one can remove these two points, then basically one is freed from the material nature. The desire to control, the desire to enjoy. So we see that as servant of Krishna, we are controlled by Krishna. And we do everything to please Krishna. We're not trying to enjoy. Then this makes us very happy. This is the point that is brought out. Let's see, is that? So the whole idea is how to engage our activities in the Lord's service. Then when that is done, means we're attached to the material nature. So what's happening is if we can change that attachment from the material nature to using it for Krishna, then we can use the spiritual nature for pleasing Krishna. So we practice what we will do in pure devotional service on this platform of karma yoga or jnana yoga, that we will use whatever our mind and senses and whatever we have in Krishna's service and use our intelligence how to best serve Krishna. And when we practice that very nicely here, then we will be able to go back to Godhead. Otherwise we will not. This is the point. So in the unpurified state, we have these difficulties. We may throw ourselves into a very advanced devotional topics and subject matter, but the difficulty comes is we are not prepared for that because we have not given up envy and not have given up lust. Right? So therefore Rupa Goswami recommends the process of sadhana bhakti. By this sadhana, then one becomes greatly purified. So this is discussed in this chapter, how to, one doesn't give up work and prescribed duty. So one starts from there, unless one is beyond that. In other words, Krishna says that you practice sadhana bhakti. And if one can do that, fine. But if one finds that one needs a little broader spectrum than that, then he says, you work for me. So this work means prescribed duties. So these prescribed duties cannot be suddenly given up, as Arjuna is trying to suddenly give them up. And just as a devotee say, well, I'll just leave all this, go to the forest. But Krishna says, no, I have work to do. You cannot do this. Right? So prescribed duties cannot be suddenly given up. Then chapter 4. In the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminated in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work and devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Then chapter 5, that was taken from 5.1. In this fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation. Devotional service is easier than the latter because, being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. And from 5.29, this fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, known as karma yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how karma yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is a path leading to bhakti. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute. And the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in other words, by performing activities, works of sacrifice, gives realization, gives understanding. So by that understanding, we realize Krishna. So then Krishna says the cultivation of activities, therefore, is work in devotion is better than just cultivating knowledge. Because if you just study but do no service, then it doesn't give the realization. It doesn't culminate in knowledge. Because real knowledge is then, given in the fifth chapter, is where there is realization. Because it's transcendental. So now we have that in the beginning, we have the conditioned nature. We are conditioned by the mind and the senses and the intelligence. So we have to engage them, we have to purify them. So the prescribed duties then do that for us. So the difference between the karma yoga and the bhakti yoga, then it will only be seen from the actual realization of the individual practitioner. Otherwise, we see that the acharyas in that, they're not performing karma yoga or jnana yoga, they're performing pure bhakti yoga. And they're doing the same activities that they're asking us to do. The difference is we think that we have a conditioned nature, we identify with that, and we feel that we are engaging that according to the prescribed rules in Krishna's service. And the pure devotee, he thinks he's just Krishna's service, and here is some service to do. So this is the interesting point, is because of the reflection, right? In the spiritual world, out of love, they are performing pure bhakti for Krishna. In the reflection in the material world, we think we're this body. So therefore, we have to become purified by engaging the body and mind in the activities, you know, prescribed by Krishna, which are the same activities that the transcendental personalities perform. And this brings us to that platform. Therefore, one can make the distinction to understand that there are still anarthas in the heart in the karma yoga, and still anarthas there in jnana yoga. Well, in bhakti yoga, it is free from all anarthas, and there's attachment for Krishna. So in the lower two stages, then the devotion is not as strong, is not the predominant factor. The other aspects are more predominant. Predominant means if we compare it to pure devotion. But the motivation for the devotee to act is he wants to please Krishna, even if he does have anarthas. Therefore, the acharyas see it as pure devotion. I mean, they see it as devotional service. Though we may not be, and because that motive is pure, they'll even call it pure devotional service. So basically we mean, if we're trying to engage the senses, mind, and intelligence in the Lord's service properly, according to direction, that is pure devotional service. But when we come to the absolute platform, then that becomes pure unalloyed devotional service. Like that, we are completely situated. So this is a fine division, but at the same time it's presented in this way so that we can understand. So, therefore Krishna recommends that Arjuna just does his duty as a kshatriya, because that will give realization. So when you perform your activity in devotion, you perform your prescribed duties with devotion, it gives realization. And then with that realization, we become more and more purified. And to the point where we do the same activity, but now it is in pure devotion. Right? We see the Pandavas, they are performing their duties as kings throughout their whole life, throughout the whole Krishna Lila. But it's never called karma yoga. and they're pure eternal associates of the Lord. So they're following this dharma just to please Krishna. Right? Because it's Krishna's pastimes. He wants to act in this way. So then they respond in this way. They perform these pastimes of these prescribed duties. So it's not the performance of prescribed duties that makes it bhakti yoga or karma yoga, but it is the devotion that is done. So only someone on the platform of devotion, or who is advanced, may not need to strictly follow the prescribed duties, because they're always absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Then just the sadhana, you know, as an example, is enough. But otherwise, the thing is most people are not on that platform. They need to engage their mind and senses in the Lord's service. Therefore, this process that is explained here must be accepted. Then, yeah, and this gives knowledge. So then, working in full knowledge, performing prescribed duties in full knowledge, understanding we're the servant of Krishna, then leads to pure bhakti. Because we know who we are, we perform our activities, so they're not material, and they elevate us. They're counted as bhakti. Chapter 6 is from 6.1. In this chapter, the Lord explains that the process of the Eightfold Yoga system is a means to control the mind and the senses. However, this is very difficult for people in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the Eightfold Yoga system is recommended in this chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of Karma Yoga, or acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. So here he's reconfirming the point that he's made in the second chapter, and now he's bringing out strongly in the third, then brings in the aspect of having knowledge. Better than that is working for Krishna. Then, in the fifth chapter, he re-establishes this. Then here he shows other branches of the yoga ladder, but shows it's still better than all this thing is just working for Krishna. Because in the yoga system, you're going to use the body anyway. You're going to go through the stages of following rules and regulations, then controlling the body, controlling the breath, controlling the mind. So you might as well do that by the process of just following prescribed duties. That automatically does niyama and niyama for you. It automatically controls the body. It automatically controls the mind. So what the yoga system wants to do is already contained in karma yoga. Then chapter 7, this is from 9.1. In the seventh chapter, we've already discussed the opulent potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different energies, the inferior and superior nature, and all this material manifestation. So here he's giving here's more. Then from 7.30. This seventh chapter particularly explains how one can become a fully Krishna conscious person. Many subjects have been discussed in this chapter. The man in distress, the inquisitive man, the man in want of material necessities, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of Paramatma, liberation from birth, death, and diseases, and worship of the Supreme Lord. Then from 7.1. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also four kinds of fortunate people who become attracted to Krishna and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. And from 7.12.1. In the seventh chapter, Krishna spoke of the living entity as being part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, and recommended that he transfer his attention fully to the whole. So here Krishna's opulences are given. And these opulences, in other words, the living entity is attracted by opulences. That's what is going on in the material world. Is we're attracted by wealth, beauty, fame, knowledge, power, and renunciation. And that's what we're spending our time either appreciating or trying to get a hold of ourselves. So now, Krishna in this chapter points out that there are all these opulences are actually his. And he manifests them in different ways in the material world. So you're attracted by opulences, fine. but now look for them in the complete whole. So since you are seeing material opulence and are attracted by it, you should see material opulence as coming from Krishna, but it's actually His opulence. In this way, we transform our attraction to the gross material elements to Krishna by seeing it in the material nature. We see something very strong, then we think, yes, this strength is coming from Krishna. So we're able to see material nature. So Krishna's pointing that we should see what is actually attracting us. It's that power. Like we go to the ocean, its power attracts us. You know, its movements, its roar, its vastness, its greatness, or its beauty. But both its power and the beauty are Krishna. So that's what's attracting us. So we should see Krishna when we're seeing the ocean. Or the beauty of the sunset, or the mountains, or whatever it is that we see in material nature, or a strong and powerful person. That power is Krishna. That is we should see. This is what's being brought up. So we should see Krishna inside these things. Because that's what we're attracted to. We're attracted to these opulences. Then chapter 8. In this chapter, Lord Krishna answers different questions from Arjuna, beginning with, what is hope? That was one thing. In the 7th chapter, then you have those persons who can surrender to Krishna and see in this way. The different kinds of persons who are pious. And then those who will refuse to see Krishna in material nature. They think they are the controllers and the enjoyers of material nature. That original root problem of controlling and enjoying. In chapter 8, in this chapter, Lord Krishna answers different questions from Arjuna, beginning with, what is Brahman? The Lord also explains karma, fruit of activities, devotional service, and yoga principles. And devotional service in its pure form. That is from 8.1. Then from verse 8.28. This verse, 8.28, is the summation of the 7th and 8th chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. Then from 12.1. In the 8th chapter, it was said that anyone who thinks of Krishna at the time of quitting his body is at once transferred to the spirits of sky, to the abode of Krishna. So this whole idea is making a distinction between what is material activity and what is spiritual activity. So he's pointed out karma yoga, engaging your activities in the Lord. Now he's answering what is transcendental, what is material. So karma is material. But doing something and seeing Krishna in it is spiritual. So someone who always remembers Krishna, even in their activities of the material world, then at the time of death, he can remember Krishna and go back to Krishna. So the point is why do we want to see the opulence? We're looking for opulence. Why transfer that to Krishna? Why transfer seeing the gross external opulence to seeing that opulence is just a manifestation of Krishna's opulence? Because by remembering Krishna, that is devotional service. By remembering Him at the time of death, we go back to Godhead. So this is important that now we understand why we must remember Krishna, and what is the difference between fruitive work and karma yoga. Those are two different things. They look exactly the same. So fruitive work of the karmi, the karma yoga the practicing devotee, and the pure devotional activities, preaching activities and all those things of the pure devotees, all look the same. So here Krishna is pointing out the difference between karma yoga, and pure devotional service. Chapter 9. From 9.1. The matters which are described in the 9th chapter deal with unalloyed pure devotion. Therefore, this is called most confidential. So now he's gone through this stage and now he's establishing pure unalloyed devotional service. Chapter 10 is from 10.1. Now in this chapter, he explains his specific opulences to Arjuna. He tells Arjuna about his manifestations and various opulences from 10.42. Devotional service and worship of Krishna are very clearly indicated in this chapter in verses 8 through 11. That is the way of pure devotional service. how one can attain the highest devotional perfection of association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been thoroughly explained in this chapter. Okay, so now specifically we're getting into opulences. Before it was general, like that, just to understand generally that Krishna's opulences are manifest here. That's what the opulence that we're looking at is actually Krishna. Now he gets into specific detail, because as we advance in this understanding, then our understanding becomes more refined. So more detail, more expertise is necessary. Just like when you're teaching someone something, you give the basics first. Those basics always remain, because they're fundamental. Then after that, you show refinement. So this is the very important, because many times in the material knowledge, because of the the point of prestige and position, and that knowledge is considered higher than work. Right? Someone with knowledge is considered better than someone who's working. So because of this, fundamental principles that can be taught in the very beginning of something, we have a tendency to throw out and consider them very basic. So we can't understand the difference between the fundamental principles and just the very basic details. So the basic details are the simplest explanation of the fundamental principles. And then very sophisticated explanations and details later are, you know, more sophisticated, are the same fundamental principles. So in the material world, we give great credence to very elaborate, sophisticated explanations of the fundamental principles. But the fundamental principles we sometimes leave to the side, because anyone can understand that. So it doesn't give us that taste, that intellectual taste is not there. And the prestige that goes with very elaborate explanations and understanding, it does not come with it. Therefore, one loses some of the taste for this. But in spiritual life, the fundamental principles are on the top. And you come down into detail depending upon the time, place, and circumstance. And of course, our realization. But in the ultimate end, we come right back to the fundamental principles. We're a servant of Krishna. Krishna is Supreme Lord. We're His servant. We render service to Him to please Him and develop pure and alloyed devotion to Him, following in the footsteps of the Acharyas. And that's what goes on in the spiritual realm. They don't necessarily bother themselves with great, sophisticated, elaborate discussions. They're just happy just talking about Krishna, rendering some service to Krishna, engaging their mind, body, and words in Krishna's service. So one may think, well, that's very basic, it's just like karma yoga. But they're doing it in pure devotion. So Krishna points out these aspects, and it's very important to understand that. The fundamental principles are the most essential. If one can grasp those, then one can grasp from the very simplest explanation up to the most elaborate, depending upon our level of realization. And one can practically apply them in devotional service. But if not, if we can't understand these fundamental principles, even we have very sophisticated understanding, we can't apply it in our life. We will not be able to. Therefore, Krishna rejects in the fourth chapter that dry knowledge is not as important as with knowledge working for Krishna in the spirit of devotion. In the 11th chapter, then from 11.1, this chapter reveals Krishna as the cause of all causes. And from 11.55, one should understand, therefore, that the purport of this 11th chapter is that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. So now, we've learned about the opulences of the Lord before, and the specific opulences in the opulences in the 7th, the specific opulences in the 10th. And now he's pointing out that, one, he is the cause of all causes, because we're saying, we're doing work. Okay, now this is a very important point. I'm going to do work. Okay, I've accepted I'm doing karma yoga. So I do this activity. Now I've done it, so I must get the result. Why? Because I've done it. I am the doer. And now Krishna is pointing out here, we are not the doer. Krishna is the original cause of all causes. So the prescribed duties are given by him. The methods of application are given by him. The result is given by him. So he is actually the cause of all causes. Because otherwise, then the neophyte devotee, while he's performing these activities, well, any devotee who is performing these activities, they may think it is them. Until you come to the platform of prema bhakti, you may think it's you. Even on the platform of bhava, one can still make the mistake to think, yes, I am great. Because one is factually doing amazingly great things in pure devotion. But it hasn't come to pure unalloyed devotion yet. So one may think, I am a great devotee. Right? So you keep yourself as part of the picture. Because I'm a great devotee, of course, Krishna works through, but because I'm so great, so therefore naturally he's working through me, he's not working through someone else. This can be a mistake on the platform of bhava. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya recommends right in the beginning a devotional service. Right? If we want to become serious and fixed in devotional service, we must become more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, always ready to offer respect to others and not expect any respect for ourselves. Then we can constantly chant. That will get us through. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, this is our Siddha Pranali. Everyone else talks Siddha Pranali, you are this person in the spiritual world, you are that. Very nice. You have that. Great. But you can be in that identity, practicing that identity for millions of lifetimes. If you have not attained this, more tolerant than a blade of grass, more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, always are ready to offer respects to others and not expecting any for yourself. If you have not perfected this verse, you will not go from bhava to prema. You can get stuck at that point for millions of lifetimes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points this out. So, therefore, this is our Siddha Pranali. You have this, the other is automatic. Means by following the instruction of the spiritual master, then by working in devotion, realization will come and automatically one will go through these stages if one follows the process, associating with devotees, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, all these things will happen, will just come. So it's very, very important to understand Krishna is the cause of all causes. Otherwise, now he's already revealed pure and alloyed devotional service, the most confidential knowledge in the ninth chapter. But now to work that, you still have to know that Krishna is the cause of all causes. Otherwise, I'm performing my devotional service to get to that platform, right? But I may miss the boat. Right? And around here, especially during the flood, that's very, it's not a good thing. So, So here he's brought up through the whole thing. You know what pure devotional service is. Now he's giving fine points. Fine points. How you can understand Krishna, how does it come, and he's the cause of all causes. Then the other is that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. Now, we're looking at Krishna in the material nature. Krishna's in two chapters has pointed out how he is the potency and the opulences of the material nature. So instead of thinking and being enamored by immaterial nature, Krishna breaks this enamored by showing that it's him. You think it is great doing some adventurous thing, doing some skydiving or something, climbing mountains. But that adventure is Krishna. That what you get out of that is Krishna. You're so thirsty you drink water, it's like nectar. That taste is Krishna. So whatever it is that you find that's great is actually Krishna. You know, what it is that inspires you to do something is actually Krishna. So in the beginning stages, this brings one from seeing just gross material nature to seeing Krishna in that material nature, his manifestation, his opulence. But now a second thing, besides then thinking I am the doer, so he removes this I am the cause of all causes. That Krishna removes that we are the cause of all causes, that Krishna is the cause of all causes. Here he establishes that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. Otherwise we will get caught in the concept of the universal form, which is the impersonalist or the Mayavadis. They get, the jnanis, they get caught up in this. So again, we can go from knowing this, that we know all these things, and get caught up in jnana, and again think we're on a higher level and don't perform our activities in devotion. So Krishna keeps referring us back to work in devotion. So here again, this point is brought out, that the form of Krishna is supreme. Otherwise, you only get to get to the stage of jnana yoga. Because worship of the universal form is only a stepping stone to pure devotion. Krishna's opulences have entered, but Krishna is a person. Right? The qualities have to come from somewhere. These six opulences come from somewhere. So they're from a person. So the universal form is not the main form. In the beginning, we may use that as the first step, but ultimately there's beyond that. Right? Ultimately there's beyond that. So we have to be able to see through, just like the small child in the beginning, then the mother is the source of nourishment. The father is the source of, you know, discipline and direction and all that. But later, then we find it is the spiritual master in the Vedas. The Vedas are nourishment. And the spiritual master is the God. Like that. And we see this is, ultimately comes back to the internal potency. In the eternal pastimes is nourishing us. And the Lord's reciprocation and rasa with the devotees is nourishing us. And we, under the direction of the Guru and the previous acharyas, then serve Krishna. So like this, one, depending upon one's stage of advancement, then the same principle is there. It's Krishna. The potency of nourishment in the mother is Krishna. The potency of authority in the father is Krishna. So for the small child, that's all the farther they can see. But as they mature, they see there's more beyond that. You know? So they continue to respect the mother and father, but now they add in the prominence of the spiritual master and the study of the scriptures and following the directions of the scriptures. And then ultimately that comes to taking part in the eternal pastimes. So this thread is there. So Krishna is pointing out, now, okay, now you've understood two these aspects here. You've understood this karma yoga. You've now understood the jnana yoga. But now you shouldn't get caught up in this. Either in karma, that I am the doer, or in jnana, that, oh, all this knowledge, I know all these things, I can see Krishna here, see Krishna there. No, you have to be able to see beyond this to the next stage. Like that. Then it is good. Just like you can see through the window, but if you're just seeing the window and not looking through it, then what's the use? Because of the window you can see. Right? So the light and colors from outside are coming through the window into the room. So first you identify, you think it's the room, there's light and so many, no. Then you understand, no, the light's coming from somewhere else. And then you see the window is where it's coming through. You also have to see that there is the real forms and everything outside. So we have to shift our attention from the material to the spiritual. Because even though the universal form is Krishna, it is not as pleasing to Krishna, that the worship of the universal form, as worship of Him directly, personally. His personal form, through service to the devotees. Okay. And then chapter 12. Then this is from 12:20. In this chapter, from verse 2 through the end, from Maya Vesha Mano Ye Mam, fixing the mind on me, through Ye Tu Dharamam Maritam Idam, this religion of eternal engagement, the Supreme Lord has explained the process of transcendental service for approaching Him. Such processes are very dear to the Lord, and He accepts a person engaged in them. So here, the whole point is Krishna is accepting one who engages in the devotional activities. In other words, those activities that are authorized by the scriptures, the acharyas, and the sadhus. Performing that, the Lord accepts that. This is very essential. Otherwise, some will have you believe that only when you get to very advanced levels is the Lord accepting. No, the Lord is accepting right from the beginning. It is done under the authorization of the devotees. Krishna accepts it. So from the beginning, Krishna is accepting this. This is very important. So it's already devotional service. So Krishna, otherwise why would Krishna come and present this whole process if all he wanted you to do was sit down under a tree somewhere and just read 10th canto Bhagavatam? Right? Like that. He's given this whole thing. So wherever you start on here, if it's in connection with him, that is the point. It means the yoga process, like the Ashtanga yoga, then when you're doing asana, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, none of these you're concentrating on the Supreme Lord at all. There's no need. You can perfect asana without thinking of the Lord once, not even for a moment. Right? You can perfect your pranayama, your asana, all these different things. Your pratyahara, pulling in the senses. But what's the use of that? So only on, and then on dharana, you fix the mind in one point. Still you haven't thought of the Lord. Dhyan, only then you put the Lord in. So only at that point does the Lord come into the Ashtanga Yoga. And in this age, I mean, Arjuna was complaining in the last age, so definitely this age is not going to work. Because at the Yama, Niyama, Asanam, Pranayama. Pranayama, that's fourth stage, you have four more stages to go. It means you have to stop the breathing. Stopped, not moving. It doesn't, the ingoing air, the outgoing air merge. It stops the breathing. Then you can start to control the senses. Right? Then you can bring in all the senses and hold them in one place. Because while the air is moving, the senses are disturbed. Only when it stops, then the mind is peaceful. When the mind is peaceful, has no desire, you can pull in all the senses. Right? So there's no question of anyone doing this. One, two people do this, some Kumbhaka yoga. But still, if it's not done for Krishna, what's the use? It's like Prabhupada says, the frogs, they have the siddhi of Kumbhaka yoga. You know, during when the rainy season's over, they dig themselves under the mud, stop the breathing, and just live under the ground until the next, you know, good rains in the spring. Or the summer, then the good rains, and they start the breathing again and come out hopping around and look for more bugs. So even though they perfected Kumbhaka yoga, but what do they do that for? Just to wait for a good time for bugs. So there's no advantage. So here the point is, he recommends that this action in Krishna consciousness, because from the beginning it's automatically engaged in the Lord's service. And Krishna accepts that service right from the beginning. The first steps, right? When the child gets up for the first time and walks one step before they fall on their face, the parents and all the relatives accept that as walking. Just they're not so good at it. They made one step and then fell on their face. Right? Next time they'll get up and walk a few more steps. So now they've walked more. So that's the point, is because of the affection, Krishna accepts this. That is why this process of engaging the mind and the senses in Krishna's service with proper knowledge is the best. Because it is very personal. Well, if we just accept the knowledge part, it can be impersonal. Right? You go to someone who is, you know, let's say, you know, very expert in their physical movements and coordination, and you tell them about this baby is taking the first step, you know, they may consider, well, big deal, you know, when the guy can walk around and all this and that, then you can bring them, I can do something with them. I can train them something in that. But because of affection, the parents and relatives see this as a very great thing. But some great athlete may think, you know, so what? So like that, the because of the affectionate aspect is most important. So the prescribed duties, they also help us cultivate the relationships with devotees. The sadhana bhakti helps us cultivate relationships with devotees so that we can appreciate those steps. The Lord is already appreciating. The acharyas are appreciating. Now for us to advance, we also have to appreciate that the devotee has made that attempt and that is pleasing to the Lord. So even the smallest devotional service is accepted and appreciated from our side. Right? So here he's pointing out what the other side thinks, so you get inspired. At the same time, before this, in the last chapter, he's pointed out, you don't think you're great. You don't think you're the cause of causes. I'm managing the temple. Yes, see, I'm such a great manager. No, Krishna is the cause of your ability to manage. You don't recognize that, you'll have problems. You know? And you have so much knowledge of Krishna, but if you don't actually see Krishna as a person, and understand all this knowledge goes back to Krishna as a person, you know the logic and the argument and all these different things and the universal setup and so many different aspects of the philosophy, you can sit and argue over fine points all day. But if you don't see the personal form of Krishna, and that is essential and supreme, useless. So therefore these preliminary stages of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga become useless if you become proud and don't see the ultimate goal. And here in this one, then he shows the other side, how Krishna, if you do it sincerely, with pure motive, Krishna accepts that as devotional service. Therefore, the acharyas accept someone who is in the sincere mood as pure devotional service, even there in the beginning stages of devotional activity. But if not, then we say the other. So it all is the attitude. Serving with knowledge in devotion. Then that gives, that brings realization. Give satisfaction to Krishna. Like that. Otherwise, then, so many critiques are there for someone who is, you know, proud of what they're doing. Chapter 13. This is from 1335. The purport of this 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the supersoul. One should recognize the process of liberation as described in verses 8 through 12. Then one can go on to the supreme destination. Then from 14:1. In the 13th chapter, it was clearly explained that by humbly developing knowledge, one may possibly be free from material entanglement. It has also been explained that it is due to association with the modes of nature that the living entity is entangled in this material world. So one has to be able to distinguish between the body, the owner of the body, the soul, and the supersoul. When one can see this, then one can be free. You know? So the whole point is by performing devotional activities, one is going to become freed from this contamination. How? By this understanding. One can practically see the difference between the body, the soul, and the supersoul. One understands that difference. So the devotional process is dynamic and progressive. Sometimes devotees will just say, no, just like how it was back in, 1969, like that, life was so simple, why are you bringing these things up, Point is that, no, it progresses. You gain knowledge from the service. You gain deeper understanding, deeper realization. And this frees you more and more. Right? Means the devotee in the beginning, even he just starts devotional service, is situated on the transcendental platform. But at the same time, if his attention deviates, he may not be situated on the transcendental platform. So when they're sincerely endeavoring, they're situated. When they're not, then they're whatever their realization is. So the idea is by this advancement, by performing devotional service, our realization becomes greater and greater. And there's more moments that we can engage in pure devotional service. Like that. And we become detached from the body. When we become detached from the body, then we are performing these things simply because it pleases Krishna. Otherwise, in the beginning, we know we're supposed to do it, we do it. So the intelligence we use just to get the mind and senses to work. But then we come to this stage where, because the intelligence, we've gotten the realization, that means the mind has accepted it. See, the difference between an intellectual understanding and realization is, intellectual understanding means that an intelligence understands it, but the mind hasn't fully accepted it. Right? Like the mind knows, okay, I should go to Mangalarti. The intelligence says, you should go to Mangalarti. The mind says, I know that. So reluctantly I go. It accepts just because you're supposed to. The realization means that the mind, the intelligence has said it, the mind has accepted it. Now the mind wants to go. The mind is disturbed if it can't go. So this becomes your value, your realization. So this is the platform you're trying to get to. So we hear, we get the intellectual understanding, we apply it, but then we also have to get the realization of the value. That doesn't change. Otherwise you see someone very enthusiastically engaged, and then suddenly they're not. There may be a weakness in the realization. You know, or by bad association, you can change your values. The mind can reject spiritual things and accept material. That's the nature of the mind. It only accepts and rejects. So you have to be very, very careful of the association. That associate with those who are always very spiritually advanced, then the mind will be given the best opportunity to associate with those on that platform who have accepted this. Right? Then we become like this. We also become. So here we understand how the modes of nature. So if we act, perform activities for Krishna, then they're not under the modes of nature, though they still look like prescribed duties. Prescribed duties are under the various modes of nature for the karmis. But when the devotee does those same prescribed duties, they're not under the modes of nature. Right? They don't get that reaction. There's no karma. And then in chapter 14, from 14.1, one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. And then from 14.1. Now in this chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains what the modes of nature are, how they act, how they bind, and how they give liberation. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attained perfection and transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. This knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained. And knowing this may attain perfection. Thus it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. From 15.6. In chapter 14, the contamination of all kinds of processes by material nature is described. Only devotional service is described as purely transcendental. So now we're contaminated by the modes of nature. We've always been engaged in the material modes of nature. This is our activities. This is what we've done from time immemorial. So now Krishna is explaining all these different modes and how by following, practicing these the activities that appear to be under the modes of nature for the process of devotional service, one can free oneself. So if one can situate oneself in goodness and do that for Krishna, it becomes pure goodness. So it's an intellectual understanding, but that can liberate you. In other words, the activities of goodness still have passion and ignorance. Why? Because we think we're the body, we're the intelligence, we're the ego, and we think we are the enjoyer. So passion and ignorance is there. Ignorance is I don't know who I am, and the passion is I want to enjoy through these activities. I do the prescribed duties for the result. and I think I am who I am. Now he's pointing out, no, you situate yourself in goodness, but do it in devotion. So if there's devotion, then that means there's no contamination of passion and ignorance. And pure goodness is the platform, is the transcendental platform. You remove those modes of nature, lower modes, you have pure goodness. So it may be an intellectual understanding, but it brings one to the platform of perfection. It brings one to the platform of liberation. Understanding that, you know, we're not the body, we're the soul, and we serve the Supreme Lord. This is a very important point to understand this distinction. Like this. And by working in devotion, it comes to this platform. You come to this platform. Then you can separate. Then it becomes Brahma-Bhuta. But not before. Until you've done your duties with knowledge and devotion, you don't get to this platform. Just to say, I'm not this body, doesn't mean we have that realization or are acting on it. Because someone who's not the body understands how doing the activities, the prescribed duties of the body, for Krishna, is liberation. Right? And someone who is not on the platform of liberation, who uses this platform for their own material ends, is deceiving. Deceiving themselves, deceiving others. Right? The Mayavadi likes to say, Aham Brahmasmi, and we're all God, you're God, I'm God, we're all God, but he's still engaged very nicely in distinction, adoration, and profit. This is deceiving. So the culture of Krishna consciousness, the practice of Krishna consciousness, is accepted. We study so we understand why. And we try to act in the spirit of devotion. And by that, we come to the platform of realization where we actually become Brahma-Bhuta, where we can actually then start to perform pure devotional service, pure unalloyed devotional service. Then in the 15th chapter, from 15.1, it is explained in this chapter that the purpose of Vedic study is to understand Krishna. In this previous chapters, it has been explained that there are many processes by which to get out of the material entanglement. And up to the 13th chapter, we have seen that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the best way. Now, the basic principle of devotional service is detachment from material activities and attachment to the transcendental service of the Lord. The process of breaking attachment to the material world is described in this chapter. Then from 15.20, in this chapter, the first five verses describe the process of freeing oneself from weakness of heart. And the rest of the chapter, from the sixth verse through the end, discuss Purushottama Yoga. Okay, now we are performing our activities. We're doing. We've understood bhakti is the best. We should perform our activities for Krishna. And like that, we understand Krishna is the cause of all causes. We understand that he is the supreme. We must act for him. You know, we understand his personal form. Now we've come to the point, and we understand that we are not this body. And that we can perform, by performing things in pure goodness, without attachment and without false ego, then we can come to the platform of pure devotional service. Now comes the problem is we have to now, at this point, transfer our attachments, right? Detach from the material world and attachment to Krishna, because that's what happened originally. We lost our attachment to Krishna because of envy. We wanted to be the enjoyer. Two, the material world. So now we're engaging in the material nature in the Lord's service. Right? And we're seeing the Lord in everything. Then we're understanding he's the cause of all causes, so we're not the doer. So that gets rid of our, you know, ego. And he is the supreme person. He's the supreme enjoyer. Gets rid of the passion. And we've come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. But we may not have accepted to go to the next step where we transfer our consciousness from the material world to the spiritual world. To the spiritual, pure spiritual attachment to Krishna. Right? we may not have done this. So without this understanding, we can't progress to the next stage, the farthest, the next, what is, I mean, we will not be able to situate ourselves there on the Brahma Buddha platform. You have to be able to switch that attachment from Maya to Krishna. Then you can become situated on the Brahma Buddha platform. Otherwise, one will get stopped. That one understands it. One can act in goodness. One still maintains that little bit of attachment. So you get very close, but one can't get close enough. Right? Krishna's talking about perfection. Before, in the 13th chapter, intellectual understanding. No, 14th. Intellectual understanding. Now we're coming to the point of realization. Right? We mentioned, you first hear, then you intellectually understand, practice. Then, so that is in the 14th. Now the 15th, you transfer that attachment. That is the realization. That has to be transferred. Should we continue? Go on tomorrow. We have 16, 17, 18. Huh? Continue? Huh? Continue tomorrow. Okay. So we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.